You have the Mets at 4 o'clock. You got the Yankees game one getting their American League Championship Series underway as they continue their quest, BT, to get back to and win a World Series for the first time since 2009. Should be a raucous environment out at the stadium. John and Susan will have you covered right here on The Fan. Carlos Rodon in game one. A huge Monday Night Football game with the Jets and Bills. So a lot to juggle here. One note that I wanted to make. We started the show talking about Kodai Senga, right? Mm-hmm. And how it was a horrible decision. So there's been an update. I did not see this. Just came across it on Twitter. I don't know when it was posted by Andy Martino.
Yeah.
It might have been last night, could have been earlier this morning, but I missed it. So Andy Martino, who covers the Mets and Yankees for SNY.TV, is in Los Angeles with the team. He's the one that had how they were going to line it up before anybody else last week. So Andy said that the Mets decision makers were told that Sean Manaea, who would have been pitching on normal rest, and Luis Severino, who would have had two extra days of rest, should be pushed further back. He goes on to say, meaning that that's why they did not start game one. He goes on to say this does not indicate a health issue for those pitchers. It simply means that Manaea and Severino were deemed more likely to be effective in games two and three than game one.
Still a bit odd. Still odd.
I'm not buying it. I mean, I believe what Andy's saying.
Yeah.
But then it just shows you that the analytics... Mm-hmm. And whatever the departments that come up with this stuff and the trainers and saying, well, he's going to be more effective. It's one day for Sean Manaea. Like, I'm not buying that the extra day. Oh, he's going to be more effective with the more likely to be more. What? Than Kodai Senga, who hasn't pitched at all this year? So me and my common sense, without my Ivy League education, can tell you that Manaea on short rest would have been better than Kodai Senga would have been as he was last night in game one. So I believe that there's at least reason to their decision based off of Andy's reporting here, but I'm not, to me, it's not an excuse, not enough.
I wish we could lift up the hood and understand how this actually went down. Like if this is true, now we understand the source of the disagreement, but how was it inputted? How was it pushed back? Who was the one who actually... you know, signed off on this? Because it had to be, as you said, I think you're right with this, the analytical team, whether it's measuring their RPMs or noticing a dip, whatever it might be, and they thought the extra... Trainers and the analytical team jointly, you know, they're looking at, hey, maybe an extra day will be a little more... result in some regeneration here, whatever, put them in a better spot to do well. So they're coming, and that's their job, by the way. We might not like it, but that's why they're on the payroll. Okay, so they do their job.
And we'll never know if they're right or not, because it's all hypothetical. Like, if Manaea does great today, is it because of the extra rest? Or if he pitched yesterday, would he have been...
We won't know if he would have been good yesterday as well. Now, it'll look more okay if he pitches very well today.
That's a good point. If he doesn't and Severino doesn't, that is a big problem.
That's a different level of criticism. But, like, was the combination of Stearns and Mendoza, who was pushing back?
Well, let me ask you something. When Andy writes, and again, this is on SNY.TV, and there's a lot more to it. I just took this one piece from it. He says, the Mets decision makers.
Okay.
They were told.
Stearns and
Mendoza. Right. Okay. So I was going to ask you, who do you think that is?
And that's the top. That's the owner. That's the GM and the manager.
Right. Stearns and Mendoza.
Yep.
The decision maker.
Got it.
I mean, it could even just be Mendoza. Who knows? But you would think the decision maker.
Could have been Stearns. Could have been.
Well, I would think more.
I think Mendoza would have been put as well.
Yeah, because of the way that they said they work. Right. Okay. But let's just say those two. So we're in agreement. When Andy says the Mets decision makers, it means Stearns/Mendoza. Mm-hmm. And then they're being told that Manaea might be better on extra rest, or Severino will be better with two extra days of rest.
God, that's weird. That is. You imagine Joe Torre, you know, saying that like about Pettit, you know, in 1998,
yeah.
Or Clemens, or even Al Leiter. You go back to, you know, other Met pitchers. Yeah. Come on.
Well, think about
it's
it.
The playoffs.
Let's just use some common sense here. Historically, in the postseason, how many times have we seen a top starter go games 1-5 and come back on short rest in game 7?
Back in the day, all the time.
Yeah, okay, right. So,
all the time.
So you don't, and by the way, that's even more like recent. It has happened before.
I don't.
So you don't think that
Madison Bumgarner did it a ton for the Giants.
And common sense would say, odds are he's going to be more effective if he goes on normal rest. Like, I don't need to go to Dartmouth or Columbia to tell you that. Odds are he's going to be better on normal rest than he would be on short rest.
Mm-hmm.
Yet, you need him on short rest because he's a better option on 3 days rest for us because my eyes say that, my gut says that, more so than the next guy. Like
than Senga for five or six
whatever,
days or whomever
yeah,
it might
like,
be. Yeah.
Like, and by the way, in this case, it wouldn't have even been short rest. It would have been normal rest.
Which
from
is what makes it very odd. I would like to, I mean, we're talking about Manaea here, but if a pitcher was like a sinker-reliant pitcher, because they say sinkers, when sinker bowl pitchers are, like Clay Holmes is a sinker bowl pitcher, clearly, but he's not a starter. But if you're a starter and you're too fresh, the ball doesn't sink. Actually, somebody with a sinker that's
right, the tired arm
predominantly in their pitch, just the way their arm action goes through the zone, it's actually advantageous to be a little bit tired. But bottom line is, Manaea's got to pitch well. The numbers against the Dodgers aren't good, but he's a very different pitcher now. As we said a couple of hours ago, ERA over seven in 11 starts versus the Dodgers in his career. So I don't. The stuff is different, but do you think that's in Manaea's head at all? Even though he's a different pitcher,
now
he knows the Dodgers have roped him.
You know, the other thing is, why wasn't this reported ahead of time? Like when...
Are we doing damage control now? Is that what we're doing?
I mean, who knows? All
could
I'm
be.
Saying
I don't
is...
Know. I mean, you know, it could be.
Hey, if I'm questioning it on Thursday or Friday, and I'm not alone, and I didn't like the decision of Senga in game one, they couldn't explain, well, this is the reason why. But instead, after the fact, when they are rightfully getting ripped to shreds because of it, now it's, well, here's why.
Yeah.
And by the way, do you think the Yankees, like, is that, are we just dealing with every team that does this now? Like, hey, this guy's going to be more likely to be more effective on extra rest, so we'll go him. Like, they could have played a factor in Rodon versus Schmidt for game one tonight.
Could be. I mean, if so, the Yankees kept it in-house, which is nice. I think it's probably more common than you think. It is what it is.
Yeah.
I hate that expression because it's almost so lazy, but yeah, you have to accept the overwhelming presence of analytics at this point and conjecture and medical inputs. Not like the old days. Hey, suck it up. You know,
they thought too hard, though. In this case, the Mets thought too hard about it.
Yeah. Well,
Manaea's your best pitcher. Yeah. Go get this. Is it? This is the end of the year. Like,
I don't disagree.
He's got how many starts left at best? Pitch
four,
him and get
four.
One day best. Is going to make that much of a difference?
Yeah, I know.
Come on. BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Alex is in East Quag. What's up, Alex?
Hey, gentlemen. How are you?
Good, Alex. How are you?
I'm fine, thank you. I'm confused about the Yankees' rotation setup. Let me tell you some facts. Fact one, Cleveland hit .233 against righties and .251 against lefties. Fact two, Rodon is clinically insane. Fact three, fact three, Heel basically saved the season when Cole went down. Now, Heel is nothing if not rested right now. If I'm the Yankees, I'm putting Heel 1, Cole 2, Schmidt 3, Rodon 4.
Yeah.
You've got Stroman to go in game 1 tonight. If the moment is too much, you can have Stroman come in. You can have Stroman come in for Rodon in game 4 when he gets lit up. And then you've got Heel, Cole, and Schmidt 5, 6, 7. I don't understand this shoehorning in Rodon in game 1.
Well, I'm going to tell you, you're neglecting one part. And listen, what you're not factoring in is Luis Heel didn't pitch well at the end of the season. That's fact number 4.
You know what? I take the totality of what I saw from Heel in a fantastic rookie season against what we've already seen from Rodon blowing up in this game against Kansas City. I would rather roll the dice with Heel based on but at his best, what he's given us, plus the fact that Cleveland hits a lot worse versus righties. That's just the way I feel about it.
I got you. Listen, you back it up with some good stuff. How were you feeling when, you know, Rodon threw 10 first pitch strikes to start the game the other day before he unraveled, clearly, and he struck out the side in the first, and he won 16 games for the Yankees and had a sub-4 ERA with almost 200 strikeouts. And, you know, outside of like 3 or 4 really head-scratchingly bad starts, was pretty damn good for the Yankees. Like, you know, Rodon, so I'm not going to hang my hat on Rodon and say, hey, buddy, make me look smart because he's too wildly unpredictable. But it's not inconceivable that Rodon pitches well tonight.
Well, and also, no, it's not. And you know me, I can't stand Rodon.
You don't believe
but,
it.
But even I don't have a major issue with this decision because he's going to pitch at some point. And I do like Luis Heel, but to your point, he was bad his last two starts.
The Pirates start,
If they started Heel game 1, I wouldn't make a big deal out of it.
Mm-hmm. I'd be surprised. I would be very surprised.
Me too. But it comes down to, like, I trust Heel more than I do Rodon.
However, you trust a rusty Heel.
Well,
he's incredibly rusty.
It's a different factor.
Hasn't pitched in 3 weeks.
I think I still think it's a roll of the dice with either at this point, and I personally trust Heel more, but also project moving forward where it wasn't Heel versus Rodon. Heel was going to start game four no matter what.
Mm-hmm.
It's Rodon versus Schmidt.
For game one.
Correct.
Yep.
And also
game seven down the road.
Bingo.
Would you rather
have Schmidt for game three and seven,
mm-hmm,
and suck it up with Rodon for 1 and 5,
and maybe steal one?
Yeah. So now the other angle for that, like, I'd rather have the way that you play that out. Schmidt for seven, just in case.
Uh-huh.
And everybody always say, and they still say, you know, Joe Torre used to love the game three is the biggest game. So you're having your best pitcher with Clark Schmidt going fine. Gerrit Cole would be pitching game one. He can't because of the rest. So the other part of it is, do you want Heel pitching once or twice or Rodon pitching once or twice? They came up with a decision to have Rodon pitching twice. I can't go nuts with that based off of the workload for Luis Heel and what he did his last two starts.
And don't think for a second they would probably deny this, but the contract that they gave Rodon has some influence on the decision. I know nobody wants to hear it, but when you give somebody $170 million and he had a pretty good year, all things considered, you're going to run him out there as much as you can to justify the acquisition. What's nuts about this, Sal? Think about before Gerrit Cole returned and when Luis Heel was absolutely at the apex of his
run. He did save their season. The Cole was right.
Oh, no, there's no question. Yeah. And by the way, he had other help. Like, you think about this. When Clark Schmidt was very good before he got hurt, but there was a point where the Yankees were establishing, like, marks of greatness, legitimate, like, breaking records in terms of starters' performance. Like, they were, like,
Stroman
the exact
was in
numbers,
there.
Yeah, like, six innings with X amount of runs, fewer, whatever it may have been. But it was a really good stat. But think about when Heel was dealing, and we would say, hey, you get Gerrit Cole back healthy, you get Louis Heel 1-2, Yanks are going far. Here we are. They are four going to be tough, but 4 wins away from getting to the World Series. Heel's had no influence the last month.
Isn't
that amazing?
Yeah, it is.
Didn't throw a pitch. He was on the run. Didn't throw a pitch against the Royals.
All the talk and speculation all year long, is Heel going to hold up? He's going to be him and Cole 1-2 in that rotation. By the way, they still might need him to be a big factor. He's already slotted in game four. Maybe they need Luis Heel. I trust him more than I do Rodon, but I don't think you can make a big deal with Rodon getting the game one start. Mike is in Oceanside. What's up, Mike?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
How are you, Mike?
Two words. Analytics suck.
Can't argue that.
That's besides the point. Yeah. The whole Devo and Brunson thing, I just think that DiVincenzo is, like, extremely, extremely heartbroken about being traded, which, as a lot of the fans are as well. You know, I think people had a harder time giving him up than Randall.
I agree with that.
100%.
I'm one of those people. But why is he pissed at Rick?
You know,
should be pissed at Leon Rose.
So that's the other thing. I think the whole thing with Brunson last night, I think that was more like a fatherly thing. I don't think that was anything like an assistant coach. You're right, assistant coach stay in your lane. But I think that was just more of, this is my son's best friend. I'm just trying to fatherly advice.
Trying to antagonize him? Trying to do what? What do you mean? Incentivize him? He was aggressive toward him. How is that a good thing?
If DiVincenzo was running his mouth because he wears his emotions on his sleeve, as he said, which is why we love him,
yep,
and he's fiery and he's bothered because he got traded away from New York, a place he clearly loved and was thriving playing in, those are understandable emotions. And right or wrong, the coaches or the Knicks bench has to just take it. Now, if he's going at a player personally, different story.
Mm-hmm.
Player wants to, you know, speak up for himself or defend him. But when a player like that is running his mouth, you know he's going to be upset. I do think that Rick Brunson should have been a little more lenient as far as not needing to react.
No, he should have diffused it rather than add a little fire or a little gas on the fire. He was unfairly and unnecessarily aggressive. I think that's a really good point. You got to understand the volatility. First of all, he plays with an edge, which is why we love him. And, you know, he's... It happened quick. It's like it happened, you know, 3 or 4 months ago. It's relatively new. He'd have a lot of time to process this. All summer, he thought he was a Knick, you know, preparing for the season as a Knick. They did the GQ shoot, which I'm sure you read about with the other Villanova boys.
Right, the odd man out from the Nova guys. Like,
yeah, I get it. He's very much hurt. I truly do. So if you're a coach, and again, unless he was going at a player, then the player's got every right to, you know, talk back and defend himself. But you're a coach, you're a grown man. I mean, they're all grown men, but you're an adult. You're like more of a fatherly, grandfatherly age. Just let him chirp because you know he's hurt, and let's keep it moving. You don't antagonize him and make it worse, which is what apparently happened.
Yeah, and then you're starting to antagonize or talk back. It's only going to fuel the flames, and DiVincenzo get more fiery. The if it were a coach, a regular coach, it'd be bad enough or awkward enough. The fact, though, that this coach is the father of his best friend.
Weird.
I just don't get it.
Me neither. I'm still confused. But I'm still Team Dante on this one. I am.
Yeah, I got to be honest with you. A part of me thought that Jalen Brunson came across as weak in this. I hate to say it, BT,
Did he maybe not know what was going on? Are we giving do we need to give him the benefit of the doubt there?
That is fair. That's fair, but he was right there.
I know.
And he did see it happen.
Yeah, but that's what I heard DiVincenzo say. I was talking to Tibbs. He said, what did he say? Yeah, he said, I was talking to Tibbs, right?
He said, I wasn't talking to Tibbs.
I thought he said he was. Either way.
For the finish part, yes, he said.
That's when he said he was talking to Tibbs. From the bench, free throw line.
Yeah.
But I thought after the game, there was an acknowledgement of that as well. And I think that's because Jalen was properly inserting himself into the situation in a non-aggressive manner to defuse it with his boy. It was in his wedding party. And that's where it just seemed like Rick just forced himself into the equation.
Remember, DiVincenzo, it was why we both love him, a little bit of a hothead.
Yes, he is.
And didn't he have an issue with Josh Hart? Remember they said they used to hate each other? Villanova.
They first started at Villanova.
Yeah.
Yes. Started in practice, but then they grew to respect each other, boys. But yeah, you're going to come at DiVincenzo. He's coming right back at you. If I was an NBA player, right, and a white guy as I am, I think I'd want to be DiVincenzo.
Yeah,
I would want to play. Yeah. How could you
not? I'd like to be a little bit more of an accurate shooter myself.
What do you mean he broke the Knicks record, dude? What do you mean? You're still not going to give him credit for shooting?
It's Al on the fan.
And by the way, he can dunk. He's got a little hops. He's not like these other white guys who are pretty much nailed to the floor. He's got a little style. He can play, man. I miss DiVincenzo.
I love that attitude. Baseball galore today. Mets game 2, 408. Yankees game 1, ALCS tonight at the stadium. John and Susan have you covered all night long right here on The Fan, so we look forward to that. Another thing that's happening tonight, BT, the Jets, your Jets, and the Buffalo Bills out at MetLife Stadium. One guy who we know won't be in attendance, Hassan Reddick, although his new agents will be with the Drew Rosenhaus.
Yep.
He signed on with him now after his agents apparently left him. Who the hell knows what's going on with this nonsense? Here's what I know. It's already week 6. He's not participating. By the time they do, if they do come to a resolution here, when's he going to be on the field and actually having his presence felt? Not to mention that that's the last thing the Jets actually need at this point. He can't run the football. He can't, run block. He's not even a good run defensive player. So I just think that the steam is, for me personally, it's already a lost cause for Hassan Reddick and the Jets.
I'm not there yet. If they win tonight, I think it'd be energizing. I'd say, hey, listen, anytime you have a chance to get a good player, but even though he's a little bit specialized, you're right, not very good against the run, great against the pass, phenomenal against the pass, we all know that. If you could throw him in here, and like the Jets are 3-3, and the division's kind of a mess, the Bills have now, at that point, lost 3 straight games, and the Dolphins seem to be cooked, and the Pats are worse, well, that's different. From a monetary point of view, it's one of the dumbest plans I've ever seen. I mean, it's really even worse than what Le'Veon Bell tried to do. It's nonsensical. Now, he's going to get in here before week 10 because he's got to make sure that he accrues. You guys, most of you know this, but that he accrues this year. Otherwise, the Jets who retain his rights, they punt it. He just keeps getting banged out for millions upon millions upon millions without getting an extension. Now, with Rosenhaus meeting the Jets brass before the game, and their quotes, I forget the name of the agency, even though it's the Rosenhaus, whatever it is, because there's somebody else involved along with Drew. They said, hey, our goal is to get him as a New York Jet. That's clear messaging for a reason. That is to incentivize the Jets to maybe, all right, give us a little and we'll meet you a yard. You give us 2 inches, we'll meet you the rest of the way. It seems like there's been a thawing in the mind of Reddick. I think he's communicated this to Rosenhaus, because Rosenhaus clearly communicated to him. They're like, dude, what are you doing? This really is dumb. So it's going to go one of two ways. You're going to win or you're going to lose. If you keep this up, you're going to lose. If you change it, you can win more. Maybe you're not going to win 100%, but you're going to win enough. So let's end the charades and let's get in here. And it's not going to take much to get him ready to play, provided he's in decent shape. I mean, if he signs it, I'm just saying, if he signs a contract, let's say by Wednesday, do I think he plays against the Steelers? No. Guaranteed play the next game. I mean, and I don't even think it's implausible that he plays 7, 8, 9, 10 limited snaps against the Steelers. You know, all right, put your hand to the ground, go run, go get the quarterback. So I think so much depends on if they win tonight, I think the Jets are more willing to bend a little bit. But there's still life to this thing.
What do you think happens here first? The Jets get Reddick? The Jets get Davante Adams?
Yep.
Or the Jets win two football games?
In a row?
No, just two football games.
Oh, geez. All right. Adams.
Because you're figuring Rahsaan. This is going to take...
wins
at least a couple. Like we thought, Adams
well, I think
was
they're
be
winning
traded.
Tonight. So let me start with that.
So that would be one.
They're going to win tonight. Right. Now, do I think that?
I don't. For the record, I'm just saying you think so. So they're going to win. That would get them one.
Do I think that the Reddick situation would be resolved before the Steelers game? I think there's a chance.
I do.
I for whatever reason they're starting to show some signs in Las Vegas that they might not trade Adams.
Right.
Like they're just a little, and I don't blame them. But reckless and just ridiculous in what they're asking for. And even though the Jets are desperate, I don't know that they'd crack. And if the Raiders don't kind of reposition what they want to and make a concession, then there might not be a deal to be had. But let me put it this way. I'm starting to think for the first time that there's a better chance that Reddick is a Jet than Adams.
Okay, that's a good one.
That's the first time I've thought that.
So then now we get to, will the Jets win their second game, assuming, you know, like in your theory, they're going to win tonight. Will they win a second game before they get Reddick?
They never win in Pittsburgh. I mean, so rare. Although last time they were there, they actually won. That was when Zach had a crazy comeback. Yeah. I mean,
they're beating the Patriots in New England, you'd expect. Yeah. But that's 3 weeks out now, so
yeah,
is Reddick
two out of three. I can't say that the Jets are prepared to win two straight primetime games. One against the Bills, who are good but not great. One against the Steelers, who are good but not great. Tough venue. I can't say that. As much as I want to, I can't.
Boy, the Jets are just the team that keeps on giving. They give us everything except wins.
Oh, that's the Jets for you. You're getting one tonight. Season back on.
BT and Sal on the Fan, 888-808-1019. Tom is in New Haven, Connecticut. What's up, Tom?
Hey, guys. Wow, what a great day for great time for New York sports. Sal, I thought of you last night watching Daniel Jones. I remember a couple of games ago you emphatically said, I can't watch this guy. I can't take this anymore. Well, I was actually pulling for Daniel Jones, you know, to make a leap last night. Sal, that throw that he made, the interception.
Oh, God.
I'm sorry. That's beyond egregious. That's beyond hideous. Beyond reprehensible. I mean, that's what a rookie does in that situation. I mean, it was critical. I'm just stating the obvious. Everybody knows this. It's critical that they get at least 3 points or a touchdown in that situation. How could he not take the hit or just throw the ball out of bounds?
And Tom, the sad part is that, like, we've seen this for 6 years in a row. This is what Daniel Jones does. So, but did you hear
we haven't
Dable
seen that too much?
Did you hear say it again?
We haven't seen that.
We've seen that. Since Dable's here, Jones has cleaned it up a little bit. But we've seen that, unfortunately, too many times, especially for a quarterback in year six. To Tom's point, did you see, Tom, how Dable explained that play after the game?
No, what on earth did he say?
He basically said that we had, and thank you for the call, Tom. Appreciate you checking in. We had this set up, that set up, and this set up. And if you need to take the sack there, that's fine, yep, or whatever, throw it away. And he, at the end of all those different things that he went through, which basically tells you that he told his quarterback all these different things, he then at the end of it said, but that's on me. But
yeah,
in reality, it was clearly on Jones. You can't force the issue there like that and just throw it up for grabs as you're getting hit. What are you doing? It's the same thing. Oh, I can't even get nuts about it anymore. What'd you expect? What do you expect from Daniel Jones at this point? By the way, that's the least of the issues. Like, that's an issue. The fact that he can't throw a deep ball with any kind of accuracy is another one. The fact that he can't properly read where the right play is for the big play down the field. Like, it's so many different layers to it. It's just not even worth discussing. Bottom line is, the Giants would be a legitimate, dangerous football team if they had a quarterback.
He's just terrible throwing the ball down the field. It just doesn't work. I mean, you're right. I mean, it's getting tough to expend energy on it. Like, he's got some qualities that are good, but he's been here a while, and we know the answer, Sal.
Yeah, not good enough. Blake is in Staten Island. What's up, Blake?
Sal, I couldn't agree more with the last thing you just said. If the Giants had a good quarterback, they'd be a dangerous team.
I mean, the defense is legit. We there, Blake, or what?
I don't know. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead. Good.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
All right, bud. I want to ask a few questions and see what you guys have to say. If you ran this franchise, would you guys seriously consider, like, maybe calling the Dolphins and seeing if they would take Daniel Jones?
Sure.
I don't know what I would do at this point. They lose. They should be 5-1. They should have beat Dallas. They could have beat Washington. They should have won last night. These are games that if you have a good quarterback, you win these games. It's pathetic. I don't want to get nuts about it, like you said, but it's pathetic. And I would love to know, if you guys ran the organization, what would you do? What would be your game plan?
I'm open for business. That's what I would do. I'm open for business. You want Daniel Jones? What do you want to give me? It's not going to be a ton, but I'd be okay with that.
Here's why it's a hard question for me to answer when they say, okay, when he says, what would you do if you ran the team? I wouldn't have put myself in this spot to begin with, because I felt the same way about Daniel Jones 4 years ago as I do today. That was a big mistake. Now, is there a clear-cut option that's better than Daniel Jones, which is why we had this conversation going into 2022, after 2022, when he finally had some success?
Mm-hmm.
He just ain't it. Can they win some games with him? Yes, they can win some games with him. Ultimately, though, they continue to lose these close games, and you know that even if they do win games with him, BT, there's a ceiling on what Daniel Jones can accomplish. Drew Lock is not the answer. I don't want Russell Wilson or Kirk Cousins or somebody like that.
We'll get our boy Tommy back, a little cutlet action.
Yeah, well, I mean, he's been banged up, I guess, right? Or he's not playing, whatever. I can't even get into that, although at least it was an entertainment factor with Tommy DeVito last year. The Giants need a new quarterback. They need a franchise quarterback. Whether it turns out to be the guy or not, we need to see. But we know this one isn't it.
He's not. You know, I don't know. And I answer that, yeah, I would trade him, of course, if somebody calls me. I'm not saying I'm actively, you know, calling everybody. But I might let it be known to a few people that I trust, maybe that I worked with in prior spots, that I know it's not going to get out there. Hey, any interest in Jones? And if there's any interest, have the conversation. And, you know, Jones is a big boy. He's a pro. So if it gets back to him at some point, he's going to compartmentalize it properly and not take it personally. Giants paid him a lot of money. Hasn't done a ton with the money that they've given him. Listen, he doesn't elevate. That's all there is to it. I mean, there's certainly quarterbacks who are worse than him. Will Levis, a lot of sloppy quarterbacks around the NFL. And that was a sloppy, unacceptable, egregious throw that got picked off last night. Awful. Can't happen to a rookie in week two.
Right.
Let alone somebody who's, you know, been around more than half a decade at this point. But while he's much better than that, I don't think that that's emblematic of his play. He's not an elevator. I mean, he's played 15 times on national TV. He's won once.
Now, I don't generally get caught up in that, but there's got to be something more to it.
There's something there. Now, a lot of the times, the Giants were a mess. Yeah. The Giants were big dogs, and the Giants got run out by multiple scores. Yeah, one time, Evan Engram dropped the ball. I think that was the Philly game. He would have won that game. I'm not saying that Daniel Jones has been awful. As long as there's no cap accelerator, and I don't pretend to know the answer. As long as there's no cap accelerator, if I do deal him, like, how punitive will it be on me if I trade him? I don't pretend to know the workings of the cap from that perspective, but they do.
Right.
If it's not punitive, then somebody wants him, I'll trade him.
And it sounds great, like, whatever. In theory, hey, look to trade him. Yeah, sure, okay, well, who would want him? Seriously, who would want him?
The Dolphins might.
Well, Tua should be coming back, at least they say, in a few weeks, potentially. All right, let's just say Tua's out for the year.
Okay.
Maybe the Dolphins do, who, by the way, somehow are still 2-3. It feels like the Dolphins are 0-8.
Yeah.
But they're somehow still 2-3 with, I guess, a chance here. All right, outside
anybody
of,
else?
Outside of Matt, I really don't think there is as I look through it here.
Look at the standings.
Like, Cleveland's in no place to be trading for a quarterback. They're a mess. Pittsburgh's
an injury away from maybe being interested, but
they
probably
got Russell Wilson and Justin Fields. You're going to take another guy like that?
No.
I mean, all right, I'll give you a maybe there.
Go ahead.
Indianapolis, Tennessee.
No, Flacco's playing great. You got Richardson. Flacco's looking great.
Jacksonville.
Jacksonville, they are in a state of disrepair. But no, not with the
If anything, they should
pick.
Be looking to trade Trevor Lawrence, but not taking Daniel Jones back in the process.
Anybody in the
Raiders?
West? Chargers, no. Broncos,
no. They got Bo Nix.
Raiders, maybe. But the Raiders aren't going anywhere, so it's hard to justify that trade. But they're not going anywhere, so probably not. Who else?
Nobody in the NFC East.
Nobody in the North. Nobody in the North right now. The South.
New Orleans with Carr being banged up.
How much longer is Derek Carr out?
Yeah, well.
I mean, I put a loose maybe on that.
Carolina, no. They're not going to trade for Daniel Jones.
No. Rams, Cardinals, no, no. Seattle,
I mean, you're talking about
maybe two teams. It's a small
maybe.
Market. Maybe. Maybe two.
All right, when we come back, we'll have the Mets lineup for game two. Just in time before
right,
we say goodbye.
Let's Speak go, Mets, Allen, go.
Fan, and we'll finish up with your calls. Jets, Giants, Mets, and Yankees, of course, who get their American League Championship Series started tonight in the Bronx. 888-808-1019.
God, I can't wait to see Judge annihilate one like 447 feet and shut up all the haters first at bat tonight. Yeah, at least first game tonight. Shut you all up.
Call of the Day with Brendan Tierney and Sal Licata on The Fan.
Today's Call of the Day is brought to you by Volvo Cars Ramsey. Finding the Volvo you want is easy at Volvo Cars Ramsey. And by Edison Heating and Cooling, New Jersey's heating experts. Kendry's in Newark. What's up, Kendry?
Hey, guys. I think a lot of managers don't do this, but we're going to L.A. to split. You got to know that. L.A. is hot, right? We're going to give up game one. That's the mentality that I'm thinking the manager's going with here. You got
no
your
way.
Number one going
no
against
way.
Their bullpen
no
today.
Off.
Listen, I know you don't want to think about it that way.
I don't think they want to think about it that way.
Well, I understand that, but okay, now you have them set up for game two and six and Severino at home mm-hmm. for 3-7. And we know that if this series the Mets are going to win, it's going to be a long series.
Mm-hmm.
So you're giving up one. You go for the split. You go on all in. All your chips are in today, right? Because I believe if they
lose
today, game two, it's going to be very difficult.
Don't
that,
lose today.
To win this
Kendry,
year.
That makes no sense.
Yeah, I'm not down with that. I don't buy it.
You're saying that the Mets plan to go in, hey, we're going to lose the game, so let's lose the first
not
one.
Not plan, but if you're going to give up one, you want your ace against their bullpen. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, sorry, Kendry. Disagree with that. And also, by the way, I could disagree that if the Mets are going to win this series, it's going to be a long series. Says who? I mean, why? The Mets couldn't win today and then win all three games at Citi Field? Like, this is sports. Crazy things happen. I'm not saying I would bet on that, but I'm also not saying, well, if the Mets are going to win, it's got to go 6 or 7. Nonsense. I think it's going to be different when the Mets come back home. We tease the lineup, BT, before we get back to the calls and finish up here. 888-808-1019. Yankees, of course, game one, ALCS tonight. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to hearing John and Susan as all the, you know, pageantry and festivities that game one have for American League Championship Series. The Yanks on their mission to end their World Series appearance drought 2009. Been a long time. And this is one where, I mean, there's no Astros here. The Yankees are going to be favorites to get by and get through. Anyway, for the Mets for game two today, their lineup, it's the same. It's the same lineup. Lindor, Vientos, Nimmo, Alonso, Marte hitting behind Alonso, which is a new wrinkle in there for game one, but they're keeping that as well for game two. Jesse Winker, DH, Iglesias batting seventh, Tyrone Taylor in center batting eighth, and Francisco Alvarez batting ninth.
All right, so the only things that you could quibble over, would you get Bader in there to start?
No.
Okay, I tend to agree. I like Taylor.
McNeil. McNeil's
that's where I was going. Would you sit down Winker and get McNeil's bat in there and have him DH? Or, as we discussed earlier in the show, maybe you have you have Iglesias go to third, Vientos DH, and McNeil at second. You like the lineup overall?
I mean,
I got to be honest. I would, as much as I'd be
not
okay,
a great lineup.
Well, but it's who they are. So
yeah, exactly. Right.
I don't think I'd go out of my way to jam McNeil in there, to wedge him
in there.
I
know.
You know what I'm saying?
I know.
We discussed it more. I think I'm okay with this lineup today.
Here's the one thing, and this is why they're in a difficult, if not impossible, spot with this. Iglesias has been ice cold.
He's been chilly.
And not only has he been ice cold, he looks, go back to the Philadelphia series, he looks like the clock has struck midnight. If I ask you pound for pound, who do you want up in a big spot? Who's the better hitter? Like, you'd be nuts to not say Iglesias based off of what he's done this year.
Uh-huh.
But.
Yeah.
But Jeff McNeil's the better hitter. Like.
Yeah, I mean, there was always an element of overachievement with Iglesias.
I know.
One
so,
of the things I would bring up, like,
so,
you know,
so
the
have
future
we,
and stuff.
Have we struck midnight on Iglesias?
Not yet.
And
he had a hit last night, didn't he? He had a hit to left field.
Yeah, maybe he did.
He went down
yeah,
and
okay.
got it. Like,
yeah.
Wasn't that the Winker play?
Maybe, yeah, maybe. Okay. Yeah.
Listen, there's definitely been a drop in his performance. Iglesias has been a great story. Eventually, the story could end.
He did not look good against Philly, especially after, I think, game one it was. Just to a point where you notice him saying, wow.
Well, that was the game he had the hit 8 or 9 foul balls when they had the, you know, two-strike, two-strike, two-strike.
Yeah.
And he was in the middle of that. But, No, he's definitely cooled off, but baseball's cyclical. I mean, yeah. Nimmo's cooled off.
And you can't take him out anyway. So, no. Like, they're not going to do it. Even as much as you want to say, hey, you know what, maybe they get a little jolt with McNeil's bat over Iglesias, who's clearly cooled off.
Why not DH Pete for Winker?
Well, that's...
that's the one thing you can easily do without interrupting the defense and easing
what do you
McNeil
mean,
in there.
What you mean?
Just have Pete DH.
You mean Jeff? Yeah,
Jeff,
okay.
That's what I meant. Thank you. Have Jeff DH and sit Winker.
Yeah, or, as the caller brought up yesterday, Gary and Mayapak, have Vientos DH.
Yeah.
Have Iglesias at second or third, and McNeil at second or third.
Or third, yeah. Which is what we kicked around. I don't like throwing McNeil at third. If anything, I would put Iglesias at third, McNeil at second. But if you want to... I mean, did have the home run. He even did have the hit last night. I mean,
bottom line is they need
Winker's done enough to get run out there another game. I guess.
Sorry, BT. Bottom line is they need their guys.
Yeah, well, that's true.
I mean, that's it. It's Vientos, Nimmo, like Lindor. We know Vientos, Nimmo, Alonso, Marte, Winker. Like those are their big bats.
Yeah.
I mean, God forbid you ever get anything out of Alvarez hitting 90. You should, but those are their big bats. Those guys got to produce. Can they produce to the level that the Dodgers' big bats can produce?
The answer is no.
Okay, but then they're going to have a very difficult time
winning
the series.
That's why I think that they're in trouble. But and you would think that, no. Yeah, I mean, think about we just had a three-minute conversation on the lineup, and it was about, I don't want to say the ancillary pieces, because they've got their fingerprints on the season, especially Iglesias. Contributions have been amazing, unexpected, amazing, right? But look what we're talking about. It's got to be about the first five carrying the mail.
Yeah, exactly.
Your point, and while Nimmo and Alonso have certainly done less than Lindor, and Lindor's been amazing, Lindor needs to remain amazing.
Yeah.
Like, if he does a little dip, and
I have no concerns about him.
I don't have any concerns. No, me neither. I'm not trying to reinvent the Lindor stuff, but he's got to keep going.
Right.
Like, he's got to be
given. That's a given.
Got to be.
And then they need at least two, you would think, of the others. Like, you could deal with Viento slowing down a little bit if Alonso and Marte pick it up.
Yep.
You could deal with Nimmo slowing down a little bit if Winker and Vientos pick it up. Or vice versa. Like, all right, Vientos and Alonso could struggle, but Nimmo's got to pick it up with Marte. Like, they have the potential there. They just got to actually go out there and do their job.
It's true. And they've done it so far this year. Right. So just do it again.
That's how they got here. But the way that they've done it along the way, BT, is that it's been mostly based on starting pitching.
Mm-hmm.
And then a guy here, this guy this night, this guy that night. Like, outside of Lindor, Vientos, Iglesias, it's been a different contributor at different times. For this type series, I think they're going to need a little more consistency from their main guys.
You know how we've often paralleled these Mets, though they've soared past it now based on their recent heroics, but we compared them to the first season, Knicks make the playoffs, 2020. COVID,
yes,
Randall,
yeah.
Okay. Before the Knicks really loaded up and got some studs outside of Randall. I think the better comparison, and maybe this doesn't come to fruition, but I think the better comparison is going to be the 2022 Giants.
Yep.
Where they've showed up in Philly and got absolutely dismantled. They won a
game. This could be the Philly game.
It could be the Eagles game.
And I think it's very, very possible the entire series can look totally different watching Manaea and the Mets today against the Dodgers' bullpen arms. Mets got to go out there and rake. That's the bottom line. And the Yankees tonight, too.
Let's go.
Hey, if they don't beat Alex Cobb tonight, BT.
5-6 runs early. Watch. Judgy.
Not so sure. Cleveland a lot better than people give him credit for. Good luck with Carlos Rodon. Yanks game one tonight at the stadium. We have you covered with John and Susan. And next, Evan and Tiki live from the American Dream Mall. Getting you set ahead of all the baseball and, of course, the Jets and Bills Monday Night Football. Thanks to everybody called and listened. We appreciate each and every one of you. Dove and Hoff as well. We'll see you tomorrow at 10.